Hi everyone, welcome to Wolves Fancast. Matt Guy here, talking you through today's game, where on a day, Norwich, Bournemouth and Watford relegated, Villa survive due to Hawkeye. On a day where Wolves are finishing in seventh place, the second consecutive season. Lads, how are we doing today? We were joined with Rich Hobbs. How are we doing?
Hello, everyone. I'm good, actually, weirdly.
By Jordan. How are we doing, Jordan?
Probably not as perky as Rich, to be honest with you, but, you know, as the kids say, we move.
You certainly do. Sorry, Rich. So how are you feeling today, mate?
Yeah, I mean, I guess there's a level of, I was going to say, retrospectiveness, isn't there, of what we... Do you look on today? Do you look on the last 9 games or do you look on the last 38 league games? Mm. And I think if you go off today, it weren't great. We're gonna get into it. If you go off the 9-10 games since the restart, I think our form's probably been relatively consistent to without sort of looking at a form table, not going to lie. You know, probably seventh is a, we probably are about seventh in that table. You know, up half good, upper mid table. And over the season, I think it's kind of reflected on it. For anyone who sort of heard Roy Keane before the game saying, Wolves aren't a great side, they're a good side. And I saw a few fans online getting a bit annoyed by it. Mm. And actually, I saw some go, you know what, I completely agree as well. And I fit into that camp. We're a good team, but we do have flaws. We do have these inconsistent streaks. We have these lapses in concentration like we showed today, which is the difference between being the seventh best team and bridging that gap to, you know, the top six or even the top four. It's if you cut out those mistakes, then you're through. And obviously you can go over a course of a season in terms of little error, you know, errors, whether they are of Wolves doing or the referees doing, which again we're going to go on to, and you'll be able to make it. We'll be able to make it 20 points or however many. Yeah. But there's 19 other teams in the league who'd, well, 18 minus Liverpool, who'd probably say the same thing. So
yeah, I mean, we will go over the game today. We are going to be doing an end of season review where we'll kind of look at the season as a whole. So today we're going to look at the Chelsea results, look at Olympiacos, including the view from the other side from the Chelsea fan cast. And because I think we need a little pick-me-up, we're going to have a little quiz as well. I hope that's all right for you guys. I know it's putting pressure when we're on a three-man booth. But I do want to focus on one positive today. Matt Doughty's joined the 300 Club, been with us for absolutely ages now. Depending on where you read, 75k to 81k. Signing and way back in 2010, I believe. George, come to you first. In the modern era, have we had a better value signing? So I'm not talking about free signings so much. I'm talking about people that we've paid money for. Have we had a better value player in the modern era?
I think you'd be hard pushed to say, you know, to argue any otherwise, really. I mean, we paid 75 grand for a player who, you know, made his debut under Mick in the Prem, all the way down to League One, back up again. And you know what? Like, in terms of a right wing back, I said it earlier on this season in the podcast, like, as a right wing back in the system we play, there's only Trent Alexander-Arnold, I think, I'd swap him for in the Premier League, which is a big statement. I know there's probably better footballers out there, but the way he plays our system and how vital he is to the system, you notice when he's not on the pitch, which is all you need to say about Matt Doherty for me. I mean, even today, I mean, we were absolutely abysmal today, but I thought we were worse when we did take, I know Doherty come off in that treble sub, but as soon as Doherty went off, we didn't even have that out ball from Patricio or Cody to, you know, to even get out. I thought, you know, as soon as we took him off, we looked worse. So I think that's, you know, that's credit to Matt Doherty as a Wolves legend. I mean, ultimately, he's probably due a testimonial very anytime soon as well, isn't he? So, and you know, and he deserves one. So, yeah, 100%. A great player and a great servant for the club.
I'd say so, absolutely. Rich, in terms of, you know, he's been through the 10 years now, coming into 10 years of service to the club. He's been through a lot of managers in that time. Do we think there's any one manager in particular where we've seen the best out of him, or does it have to just be Nuno for some of the football that we are playing and that he's a massive integral part of?
Well, I think that sort of kind of sprung to me when Jordan was speaking in a way, because obviously he's someone who hasn't almost found his ceiling yet. And personally, I'll be honest, I've probably not been his biggest fan. Mm-hmm. Even sort of back in the Championship season, arguably, as I said, last season as well, if you look at areas to improve, where we could improve upon, it was that right centre-half and also right wing position. And don't get me wrong, he contributed goals and assists last season as well. But there's always that, is he going to be able to push us into that top six, Europa League pace? But time and again, he's kind of consistently shown that, he's not looked overawed at any level that we've played so far. That's testament to the man himself more than anything else, that, he's shirked off competition. The way I see it, he kind of really sort of embedded himself in the team that League One season. He played a little bit Championship when we got relegated that year, but, from memory anyway, he wasn't someone who played lots of games and he was a full-on starter. But, in the League One campaign, he was fighting for Ricketts for his place.
Yep.
The season after, he was fighting Dior for the place. The season after that, it was again Iorfa, and he went and sort of played a little bit at left back as well the following season under Lambert as well. So, he's someone who has always wanted to play, and I think that kind of must stand out for managers, hence why, again, I think he said it in his interview earlier this week, I'm still in the team, I must be doing something right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of it. And you've kind of got to keep hoping he keeps pushing forward. And as Jordan said, he's very much a system player. Would he be able to play at right back for Man United next season? Probably not. Mm-hmm. He wouldn't probably, I don't think he'd necessarily work well in their system. The system wouldn't necessarily work well for you. But for a lot of Wolves players, they've either adapted to the formation and style of play if they were there before, like Cody and Doherty, or they've been brought in to play that system. And again, I think that's a massive testament to him that he's changed his game. I guess sort of in answer to your question, he's played his best football under Nuno, but he's shown the professionalism under the likes of Jacket and under Lambert to probably get him to where he is now.
Yeah, I mean, echo exactly what both of you said, really. He's a player that always in and around some of the good things that we do as a team when we are on top form when it comes to our attacking play that is so lauded over. He's always around the conversation. He's chipped in with enough goals and assists this season that we can really have him as a really good impact player for us when we need a goal. Maybe not so much Project Restart as I think as a team we've struggled creatively throughout Project Restart or post, I should say. But I don't think he can be underestimated, his contribution to the team and where we are now as a benefit to what he's been doing for us. So the elephant in the room, really, we need to talk about the Chelsea game. So we'll move on to that. So going into the game today, big permutations depending on the result. We needed a win. We couldn't rely on any other team to do us a favour. Palace, don't think any of us expected Palace to get a point, let alone win the game, to be fair. So I don't think we were relying on us winning the game. What were your kind of initial thoughts going into the game? Jordan, I'll ask you first. What were you kind of hoping would happen? Where did you think we were going to be in terms of a performance prior to the game itself?
Well, I saw 3-4-3 and I thought, right, we're playing, at least we're looking like we're going to have a go for it. It's a big thing I said about the Sheffield United game, and I know I put it in the group earlier as well. Like, it's just no intent. Like, in terms of today, ultimately, we couldn't take, in theory, the game, it was in our hands, but after watching Palace at Molineux last Monday, I think we all expected Spurs to beat them. And I mean, lo and behold, they haven't beat them, surprisingly. Mm-hmm. But you know, we've lined up 3-4-3, and I think that Pedence was probably the unluckiest man ever to not be starting the game after, you know, the last few performances he's had. Brought back Jota, and you know, I'm one of Jota's biggest fans. I don't think he's been very good for a while. And, you know, first half, I mean, Raul, Jota, the ball just never stuck. It was like a pinball. Like, it was embarrassing, really, that we couldn't even put, you know, trap the ball. And, you know, it was sort of meandering out to sort of a 0-0 at half-time, like, you know, we're so used to. And again, we were a bit passive, but, you know, it gives us a foundation then to bring on Traoré. And, you know, Chelsea would have to come out to us as well and try and get a goal. It probably suit us to start hitting them on the counter a bit more.
Yeah.
I mean, as soon as he gave the free kick, I thought it looked a bit soft. And you see the replay, you just see it's just an absolute Tom Daley dive. But you just knew exactly what was going to happen as soon as it was put down on the floor. You just knew, typical, it was just going to go in the back of the net. And it's a cracking hit by Mason Mount. He impressed me all day, to be fair.
It is.
The second goal was just... Honestly, if you know, if my pub team conceded that on a Sunday, we'd be getting pelters from the gaffer. It was sloppy. Like the whole thing, like the free kick from Cody was just a bit of a nothing, rushed nothing ball. Volley's got sucked out, and then I don't know what Cody's trying to do when, you know, Cody's favourite for the ball when Giroud's knocked it round Stricio. And I don't know how Giroud has beat him to the ball, because Giroud, again, I really rate him as a player. He's very limited, but he does a fantastic job. Like, he's out-sprinted Cody. Like, I reckon if you looked on FIFA, his pace would be about 40.
Yeah, it's low. Like, it was just, low.
I had no idea how Cody didn't get the ball.
Rich, let's get straight into it, bud, in terms of the goals then. We need to talk about that free kick that wasn't. I don't want to make this a podcast about VAR again for the millionth time this season. But let's call it how it is. It's not a free kick, is it?
No, and I mean, probably out of everyone on the fan cast, I've kind of always led with a fairly fundamental view when it comes to refereeing, that it's not that it doesn't impact the result, but you shouldn't let it impact what you do.
Mm-hmm.
For example, I think I saw, again, online, sort of people saying, well, we wouldn't have conceded that second goal without the bad decision for the first goal. So, no, you need to be professional. You just need to get on with it, because there's nothing you can do. As soon as he gives away, you know, as soon as the ref blows a whistle and he says it's a free kick, there is nothing in the laws of the game that Pedro Neto or Ruben Neves will be able to do. You know, the ref's not going to turn around and say, yeah, no, I think you're right, actually.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't make it any less frustrating when, you know, it's a clear dive.
Yeah.
And, you know, for the 5 seconds it takes to look on a replay. And,
this is it.
You know, don't get me wrong, I think the ref, from what I can remember, the ref's got a tough view on it because he's behind it. I think if you're sideways on it, you see that there's no contact. And because all he sees is Neto lift up his leg and then start to bring it down, and then a lot of, you know, goes down like a sack of spuds.
Mm-hmm.
The free kick, you say it's unsavable. It's a great, you know, he's done it. Mason's done everything right from the free kick. Don't think Patricio, you know, you can sort of lay any blame at him. It's one of them. It's a dead ball situation. And he's done what a quality player an England international will do. The second one, as Jordan says, that is not a goal. We've conceded one. What time did the goal go in? Like 42nd minute? Something like that. Just on the stroke of half time.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing how Wolves play, and we are slow in our build up, I have no idea what was going through Conor Cody, who, between him, Neves and Martino, who was on the bench, their job is to dictate the play. They control the tempo. If we go fast, it's through them. If we go short, if we go long, it's all through them. And, you know, the blame for me sort of lies with Cody on that, because we're a couple of minutes on the clock, just wind it down. You know, unless we think we're going to really get a chance to do it. But the whole team just seemed like to be on four different wavelengths. Mm. And, you know, it's just a systematic breakdown. As Jordan said, if you do that in pub, you know, we scored against Palace just before breaking, like, well, but Cody said in his interview, that's the best time for us to score a goal, going at the break with a lead. And for then us to almost be at the behest of that was really frustrating, because we're not usually a poor team when it comes to doing, you know, when it comes to managing situations like that on the pitch. Ironically, the two times this season it springs to mind when we've done that, a Chelsea away today and Chelsea at home, when we made idiotic decisions on the ball. And, you know, whether it's a bogey team issue and it's just one of them, or, you know, whether Lampard's kind of got our number a bit, but we conceded that, was it Tomori scored an absolute belter at home, and the heads went, and it just felt the same today. And as soon as we went 2-0 down, I mean, we showed a bit of fight second half, and you could argue we weren't really in it an awful lot in the first half. I thought it was fairly even, you know, for the first 40 minutes. Mm-hmm. I thought I pegged us down for a draw. And for the first 40 minutes, I thought, you know, that's solid. We're not, you know, not a lot of sticking to Jimenez, but Doherty was getting forward well. Johnny was getting forward well. And I thought, you know, I'll keep this up second half. Something usually drops for Jimenez. That was sort of my thought process. But as soon as, I think it was 1-0 at halftime, I could have seen us kind of building up that momentum. As soon as the second one went in, you know, for Wright was on the wall, especially sort of two before half-time. And I think that's what will disappoint them the most.
Absolutely. I mean, for me, the free kick, it's not a free kick. We, you know, I think it's pretty cut and dry about that. But I don't want to take anything away from the free kick itself. I love seeing a dead ball goal. I think it's a fantastic free kick. And I've got no complaints about the free kick. I don't think anybody could have done anything any differently other than grow 6 inches to try and block it. Do you know what I mean? No real issues from that point of view. The second goal, though, is calamitous in the extreme for me. I mean, yes, you're absolutely right. Why at that time in the game are we lumping balls forward from a free kick? You know, yes, to allow the header to lose possession. Okay, it's a 50-50 header. So, okay, not fantastic, but it happens. They get the ball up so quickly, Chelsea, and to me, Sace is at most fault for me, because he doesn't commit to marking Giroud. He doesn't commit to attacking Mount. He's just stuck in no man's land, allowing Giroud the easiest run in on goal. And then Cody, exactly as you said, George, you know, how is he allowed Giroud to get around him and get that shot away? It's calamitous. And, you know, I feel for Sace in a way, because he's been moved around from pillar to post in different roles. And, you know, we've talked about on a lot of occasions how actually, especially when Bolly was out, who he's been a good stand-in replacement. And he's been, you know, one of the reasons why we haven't shipped a load of goals this season, but definitely wasn't his finest moment for sure today. No. Maybe I'm being overly critical just in anger, but it was just for me, you know, that's a defensive fundamental. You pick what you're going to do. You either mark the striker or you commit earlier to block the pass. And he's done nothing. Jordan, am I being too harsh?
No, you're not, man. And I think that as well, like, you know, with Connor Cody, and I don't want to criticise him at all, but it sort of fits the Connor Cody narrative. Big physical striker up against him. Rubbish. Mitrovic did it to him in the Championship. Fulham and in the Premier League. Giroud's done it today. Abraham tore him a new one earlier on in the season. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a great captain, great leader, but that's where the limitations of playing a central midfielder at centre-half is. Physically, he isn't up to it in terms of, you know, on the ball, fantastic. And, you know, when we're on the front foot, he's a brilliant, you know, brilliant. And I never want to see him go. I'd give him a lifetime contract. But that is the flaws of playing Connor Cody. As soon as he gets tagged, you know, pulled up against the big man, he always comes out second best. And that's a shame, really. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's a World Cup winner. You know, there's no disgrace in that. You know, Mitrovic is a handful. But you know, I fancy him any time he's playing, you know, Aguero. I'd have any change out of him in two seasons for Man City.
Yeah.
No, I fancy him, though. It's just any time there's a big bloke comes up against him 6 foot plus and a bit physical, he's not right for the system. And again, it showed it today for me.
Absolutely.
I was going to say, so 2 points on that. I think you bang on with when you're sort of saying about Drew as he, you know, he's a quality player, he's a World Cup winner. Chelsea on a bad team, you know, they finished in the league table, you know, but it's not a case of Wolves were undone against a bad team. Don't get me wrong, they've conceded a lot of goals this season. They also won a lot of goals, won a lot of games even, and they're, you know, they have the potential to be a really good team. Across that park, they've got high quality international players, quick players and dynamic players as well. With Cody, it's interesting. I wouldn't say physical. Yeah, I'd say he's not good against a physical striker, but I'd say he's not good against a striker with physical attributes. Mm-hmm. Because if you think about the game early on in the season against Chelsea, he had an absolute nightmare against the speed of Tammy Abraham. And there's been a few times when he's been up against a genuinely fast, quick centre forward and struggled. But at the same time, you say he struggles against a classic target man sometimes as well. And I think because he is by trait, he's a midfielder playing a sweeper in the middle of the back three, he can, and he knows how to defend, and he's shown that he is a good defender. And he can put his body on the line and make interceptions and do the rest. But I think when it comes down to that extra level of quality needed just to challenge somebody on physical attributes the way, let's say, Bolly can, that's what fundamentally I think lets him down. But apart from that, he's kind of got everything else you need in that position. I guess it's a bit of a trade-off, and you know, that's the reason he plays in the middle of the back three, you know, with the likes of Bolly next to him, who can, you know, go toe-to-toe with Son and, you know, Sace on his day, or Dendonka on his day as well.
Yeah. I mean, listen, there's so many pros to Connor Cody that, you know, you're right, it's a trade-off in some instances. But, you know, if you are looking to get to that elite level, you have to ask the question, is it good enough to get to that elite level? Well, that's something that, you know, we'll thrash out, I'm sure, at the end of season review and well into next season, because he's not going to be going anywhere, and I don't think he should at this point.
No, I think he's still got a vital role to play in this team and squad.
Yeah. I just want to touch on, before we jump in with the view from the other side, it's been said that Nuno sometimes isn't dynamic enough when it comes to his substitutions. He's rolled the dice today, and I think for the first time that I can remember, we've had and obviously this is helped by the fact that you can have five subs now, but a triple substitution. It was at this point that I noted that I thought we've lost any sense of shape here, or any sense of any sense of a plan. It just felt very much like a group of talented individuals that have been lumped together and didn't really have a plan or a tactic going forward. Rich, what was your views on that? Do you know when we've made the subs, did you have any hope that anything was gonna happen? You know, we brought Traore on, and that often has led to success, especially in the second halves of games. But did you have any hope when the subs came on? Moutinho, Vinagre and Podence, that anything was going to happen?
I think when Traore came on, I did, because he immediately started driving at defenders. I've got a bit of a thing about Traore playing right wing back, mm-hmm. because I feel that he can drive the ball forward from deep, but I don't like him starting in that far deeper position. I think that whole, you know, I prefer it when he's got the freedom playing in the front three and having someone like Doherty behind him. So for him to come on and then for 15 minutes later to then get pushed back, it does feel a little bit square pegs round holes for me. Mm-hmm. I've got frustrated with Nuno with some of the subs. I think a lot of people have the lack of him using them a lot of time. I think he said it doesn't fit with our process and system. And, you know, he's been a big advocate to moving back to the three subs. And initially I was sort of of the opinion, well, you've got to adapt and move with the times. You know, there was a point, you know, but even when I first started watching football, that you could only have 5 subs on the bench, and now it's 7. Oh, well, it was 7 at the start of this season. And, you know, there's a point where you could only make 1 sub in a game. So there's a level of adapting with the time. But I think you're right that when we have made mass substitutions, sounds like my Asda order when I say mass substitutions, it doesn't kind of quite work for them. And it, you know, Podence came on, and I like him. I really do. And he kind of made himself busy, but almost too many things happened. Personally, I've made, you know, you take off Doherty and maybe, you know, I don't know, you bring on Vinagre and shift Johnny out to the right, and you kind of keep those extra players moving forward. I don't know. And so, I don't know, it's all ifs and buts, I think. But you are right that this squad doesn't quite know how to handle it. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. But when you're 2-0 down and you need a response, that it didn't come with the subs.
Okay. Jordan, have the final say on the Chelsea game then, in terms of the second half and the lack of kind of chances that we've created, and the fact that once again we feel we're a bit toothless when it comes to creating when we aren't on our best form.
Well, in one word, it was wank, wasn't it? Like, let's not beat around the bush. Yeah. Like, you know, I sort of, again, me and Stu got a few pelts for Sheffield United. I'm not gonna take my words back. But it's that thing, like I said at the start of this podcast as well, I just felt that it's all about intent, really. And again, I feel like we've approached the game with no intent. Like, I never thought from minute 1 to minute 90 that we ever looked like or even shaped up to win that game today. And that's what's the disappointing thing is for me. And again, we're going to go into it in more detail in the season review. But since the lockdown, we've got Arsenal, Sheffield United, Burnley, and today has ultimately cost us arguably top 4. It was there for the taking. And I think we all, you know, myself, I was a big advocate. I thought we'd get in the Champions League spots, especially from where we got ourselves to. But looking back now, hypothetically, we beat 16th, 17th and 18th since the, you know, we haven't beat anyone around us. So, 7th, yeah, it's a decent season again. You know, we've got more points than last season. Fantastic. But looking at where we were, I think it's a massive disappointment, and I think it's a real, real flat end to the season.
I think we need to be realistic, and if it had gone the other way and results had gone in a way where actually coming towards the end of the season we built some momentum and finished in 7th, I think we'd be having a different conversation. But it's the hope that kills you, isn't it? We know that. It's what could have been, and we look back on certain goals and certain games where you think to yourself, right, if it was only that one goal difference, the butterfly effect, what could have happened? But
to add to that though, Matt, sorry, as well, just to add to that though, look where Leicester have come.
Well, yeah,
you know what I mean, and that was at the start. You know, it was there for us, 100%. It was there for us, and I do think it's a massive opportunity missed, because, you know, lo and behold, if Arsenal win the FA Cup as well. Mm-hmm. And then we're getting knocked out of the Europa League. That squad's getting ripped apart. It ain't staying around.
Well,
because a lot of them deserve European football. So,
well, with that,
undoubtedly that'll happen.
With that, we're going to have a view from the other side and speak to a Chelsea podcaster who, hopefully, by the miracle of Zoom, we're going to get David from the Chelsea Fancast on. David, can you hear me, bud?
I can. Can you hear me?
I can hear you loud and clear. Welcome to Wolves Fancast. Really nice to have you on. Thank you for joining us today.
Pleasure.
A result that obviously is fantastic for Chelsea, not so fantastic for Wolves. However, we are now Chelsea's biggest fans going into the the FA Cup final. How did you see the game from Chelsea's point of view? You know, you didn't really, as far as I'm concerned, weren't really troubled by us, if I'm honest. How did you see the game, and how did you feel your goals? You know, how did they went, and would you have done anything any differently? I'm guessing not.
Well, yeah, scored more, so I didn't have to go through the last 45 minutes feeling rather sick, knowing that Chelsea have a proclivity for letting goals in. But I thought, you know, for most of the first half, really, I thought it was a very even game. They kind of cancelled each other out in a way. It was interesting that Frank stuck with the 3-4-3. Which I thought he might do, you know, knowing that Wolves play 3-5-2, you wouldn't want to get dominated in midfield. So, yeah, I mean, they looked kind of nervy. It was a really tight game. And, you know, as you will know, I mean, you're big football fans, goals change games. And, you know, Alonso dived a bit. Don't think it was a free kick myself, if I'm really honest. And Mount put it away beautifully, actually. I thought it was a really good free kick from Mount. Really pleased to see him score. And then the sucker punch, you know, minutes later when Mount put Giroud through. And I thought Ollie did really, really well, actually. He kind of had no right to score that goal and he still managed to get it in. So once that went in, I felt a little bit more comfortable. But as I said, you know, this is Chelsea. You know, they're nearly always going to give you chances. But I have to say, if I'm really pleased with anything today, it was the way that they defended. And I thought they, you know, Zouma and Rudiger actually looked like proper centre-backs today. And I think, you know, the fact that they had a keeper that they felt a lot more confident in spoke volumes.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we were talking prior to you coming on about how toothless Wolves were in creating chances and actually troubling Chelsea in the first place. And, you know, you would be pleased from your point of view that Chelsea didn't really have a lot to defend against. As you mentioned, we've said, yep, we think it's a dive for Alonso, but you cannot take anything away from that free kick. It's spectacular. It's you know, if it was for any other game, you'd be getting up and applauding. You'd be really happy to see it. In terms of kind of Mason Mount, his progression must be pleasing for you guys. Is there anybody else next season looking ahead who Wolves fans should be fearing playing in the next set of fixtures? Maybe like any young players that are kind of coming through the ranks that haven't had as much of a chance this season, but might next.
Well, you know, most of them have played this season.
Well, yeah, sure, yeah.
For the obvious reason. But I think Mount has been just astonishing this year. And I think you know how nuts social media is for football supporters. And, you know, a lot of these young guys have been getting a lot of abuse, which in a way tells you that a lot of supporters have actually forgotten that this is their first year in the Premier League. And, I mean, Mount's, I think, started over 50 matches this season. He's clearly the foundation upon which, you know, Frank wants to build the next Chelsea side. Mm-hmm. And he's just been superb as far as I'm concerned. I mean, he's kind of, you can see that it's like having Frank Lampard on the pitch in a sense. You know, I think he really, really trusts him. His energy in the press, I mean, he sets the tone. I can't speak highly enough of him. But in terms of next year, you know, I'd like to see Ruben Loftus-Cheek come more into it. I mean, he's just coming back from a really nasty injury, so he's only really had a bit part to play. You know, Billy Gilmore was fantastic when he came in. Sadly, he got a knee injury and had to have an op, so he's out for a few months. But I'd like to see him push on. I think Tammy Abraham really needs to prove that. This sounds a bit unfair because he scored 15, 17 goals in all competitions this season, which, you know, for a 19, 20-year-old is phenomenal. But I'd still like to see more from him. I hope he gets more of a chance. I think the real question mark is around Hudson-Odoi. You know, I mean, he burst onto the scene a bit last season, got a few England games as well, then got a nasty injury. He's a bit, you know, Billy Big Bollocks, if you see what I mean. So he needs to kind of, you know, walk the walk as well as talking the talk. But, you know, it seems really churlish to criticise some of these kids because that's what they are. They're kids. Yeah. And the thing is, they're playing for a top four side. I mean, you know, irrespective of whether we'd got in or not, that's where people expect Chelsea to be. You know, so they have a lot of pressure on them. So I can't speak highly enough of them. But obviously, yeah, I want to see a lot more from a few of them next season.
Yeah. I mean, for a lot of Wolves fans, next season, the aim will be to solidify the team as a top six team and break that barrier that so many other teams in the past have found it difficult to do. Chelsea, obviously, Frank in charge, I think you would have been forgiven, people, if you didn't make the top four. And I know that's not Frank Lampard's ambition. However, what's Chelsea's aim next season? What's the possibilities? You know, what are you looking to do going forward? And where do you think you'll end up, you know, in the next season with transfers, being able to, you know, Frank being able to put his hand in his pocket and spend? What's the aim for next season?
I think it's going to be really interesting next season. And you know, you're right. I think I didn't expect Chelsea to do much better than mid-table this season, hand on heart. Mm-hmm. I certainly didn't think we'd get top four, let alone get into an FA Cup final. I really I really hope that we win the FA Cup next Saturday, because it would be phenomenal if we could do that, and especially for Frank. But I think next season is intriguing because, you know, clearly we're allowed to spend a lot of money, and we've already, you know, hooked up Timo Werner, who looks a hell of a player. Ziyech is a good player. If we get Havertz, which a lot of people are saying we're in, you know, we're in a good position to do, again, he's another huge talent. I really do think we absolutely have to have a world-class goalkeeper. You know, you win titles built around, you know, a really, really good defence, which means a good spine, and we don't have a good spine. You know, we don't have a world-class keeper, and we don't have a world-class centre-back, and I think we need both to really be challenging. I think that we're a long way behind City and Liverpool. So, you know, I think realistically, I think, you know, top four, absolutely, and you know, again, a bit of a tilt at the trophy and perhaps making a better fist of the Champions League than we have done, because we're going to get booted out by Bayern next week, no doubt. I have to say, they're the best team that I've seen play at the Bridge this year, Bayern. They were phenomenal. And I think this is why it gets tricky, because suddenly the whole game park has changed, because, you know, this season, nobody expected Chelsea to do well. Nobody expected much from Frank. Full of kids, yada, yada, yada. Next season, the kids will have had a year's experience. Frank will have achieved something that nobody expected him to do. And they've had to spend a load of money. And I think the pressure and the expectations on Frank will be so much greater next season. And I have to say that worries me, because this is Chelsea. What I would like to see them do is to really look at what Liverpool did with Klopp.
Yeah.
And say, look, just give him 3, 4, 5 years. Get him in a situation where he's got the team that he wants. Do some surgical buying. Buy the right players, the right positions. And evolve it more organically. My worry is that that's just not what Chelsea do. So that if we don't do as well next season as we did this season, then I think it could be problematic.
Mm-hmm. Last question for me, and I'll turn it over to the other gents if they want to ask anything. I'm going to give you the magic wand. You could sign any Wolves player next season to improve Chelsea. Who are you signing and why?
Well, I'm tempted to say Traore, because he's a beast, man. I mean, good grief. Muscles on him. And he's a good player. I mean, Wolves are a fascinating side for me. And I think, you know, you look at the first half being so tight. They were so well organised, so well disciplined. They got a lot of time for Nuno, who's, I think, a super manager. I think if I was going to sign one player at the moment, it would be a toss-up between Patrizio and Cody. I think I'd probably go for Cody. I like him. He's a good player. Underrated.
Well, I'd urge you to listen back to this podcast and hear the rant from us all about Cody about 15 minutes ago. But I know one of those. And it's horses for courses.
Yeah, and he got beasted by Tammy when we did G5-2 up at Molineux earlier in the season. I know that. But he's, you know, he's a good player. He's a good, solid Premier League defender. Interesting. So, you know, I like him. What can I say? I don't have to watch him every week, so, you know.
The view from the other side. And it's interesting that you say that, because, you know, we watch week in, week out, and we have our own opinions, and then it's interesting to see somebody that maybe will only watch us once or twice a season, or maybe a bit more when your own team isn't playing. But it's one of those, really. Lads, Rich, George, anything that you want to ask David before we wrap up?
You kind of almost half answered it in terms of the Patrizio one, because for me he's been quietly probably our most consistent player over the season, in my opinion. And you know, he does the unspectacular very well more often than not. And when you compare it to Kepa in goal for Chelsea and what's kind of gone on there recently, I guess what do you kind of see the way forward with that situation? Because he came for so much money, and I don't know, like you build a football team from the back forwards, and Chelsea seem to be doing it the opposite way round at the moment with some of the acquisitions they've made. And you know, that basically, do you think he's going to stay around next season, or you know, is it likely that Kepa's going to stay, really?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, obviously it depends on if they're going to get anybody in. I suspect that they're very much looking to get somebody in. I think it was really interesting. I think I tweeted before, you know, sometime last week after the Liverpool game, that, you know, Frank's got the biggest decision of his career to make today, and that is to drop Kepa. He had to play Caballero. I mean, you could see in the Liverpool game that Kepa's head's gone. You know, and the players have lost confidence in him, and you cannot have that with a keeper. You've got to have confidence in your keeper. Whether he stays, I can't see him staying. But the trouble is, as you so rightly said, they spent 72 million quid on him. Somebody upstairs has made a massive, massive error. I mean, if you look at his track record at Bilbao, it wasn't that impressive there either. So not many people had heard of him before he came in. He's got an appalling statistical record. And I mean, I know that football in my book is not about statistics, but it is there for all to see. I cannot see how he stays, but the difficulty is you know, who's going to buy him? I think the best solution is this, is that we buy a really decent keeper. And I don't mind, I mean, you know, the people that have been put in the press are Onana from Ajax, Oblak would be superb if we could afford him. But I would even go for somebody like Nick Pope. I mean, you know, there are good keepers out there who are better than Kepa. And I think then what happens is that Kepa would probably get loaned back to Spain, hopefully have a good season over there, which means his resale value goes up and we can flog him off. And you know, I think somebody upstairs has got to realise that they made a massive rick and they need to sort it out.
Yeah, I think you bang on. And personally, I think Caballero being in goal definitely helped Chelsea today, just because I think, I don't know, either the defence had more confidence in Caballero, or it meant that because he is second string, they dropped that little yard deeper and it did sort of restrict balls up a bit more. And just, I don't know, like, I mean, it's ironic, isn't it, that Kepa's actually been one who's needed more protection, so to speak, and he's just not provided, just hasn't really kind of worked out for him the last two seasons. But, you know, today, Chelsea just looks solid at the back. I know, felt like just a bit of a wake-up call with the keep situation as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. Two of the best, I mean, that I mean, you know, I know you're probably all a bit fed up and annoyed that Wolves didn't create much. And, I mean, look, this is something that I often say, you know, when I'm reacting to the reactions on social media and on my own Chelsea fan cast. You know, football fans have an amazing ability to forget that they are actually playing another team. And that other team can play well, you know. And I think we defended really, really well as a team. You know, we pressed high up the pitch. We were solid in midfield. And you can't always say that about us. And I think this is why the 3-4-3 is better for us. And I thought they defended really, really well. And that's why Wolves didn't have much of a sniff. I don't think it was, you know, lack of any effort. I mean, yeah, they could have been, you know, more creative. I get that. But they played against a side today that defended really, really well. And that's one of the best defensive displays I've seen by us this season. The other being United in the Cup the other week. And guess who was in goal for that match? Willy Caballero. Yeah. So I think it makes a big difference.
Fair enough. Well, we wish you the best of luck in the FA Cup final. Obviously, it has massive implications for Wolves as well. So we are going to be not-so-secret Chelsea fans for you guys and hope you can do the business. But David, we really appreciate you having you on.
Yeah, pleasure.
Thanks. I think we'll take a break at this point. I think I need to lie down. So we'll see you in the second half, and we were going to preview Olympiacos and we're going to do the quiz.
Hey, it's David here. Now, I know you love a bloody good website, don't you? Look, come on, you do. You like a good website. If you're on your phone, you're on your computer thinking, I want to see a bloody good website, I'm going to go find one right now. If you want a bloody good website and you want one for yourself, for your business, why don't you go check out our sponsors, pixelyetimedia.com. They don't just do websites, of course. They do loads of different things for your marketing needs, such as design work and brochures. And they do our website as well, wolvesfancast.com. It's a really good design. We're really pleased with the work over at the guys at pixelyetimedia.com. So, again, you're looking at some websites, you're thinking, oh, I really want a website that looks that good just for me and my business. Why don't you go check them out right now at pixelyetimedia.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to the second half of Wolves Fancast. We're going to preview Olympiacos now and try and be a little more positive about what will happen in the second tie of the game. George, we're 1-1 on aggregate. We've got the away goal. What do you see happening in this game? And who, out of Sevilla or Roma, should we get through, would you like to face?
I don't know, is the honest answer. I mean, I feel really flat after today's performance, if I'm honest with you. I mean, if we turn up like we have today, forget about it. And it was the same, you know, like I mentioned earlier. the Sheffield United performance, the Burnley performance, the Arsenal performance, Chelsea today, anything like that, we forget about it. We get knocked out. You know, I do think we've got, obviously that away goal is massive and vital, and we're going to have that little bit of positive. I think that Olympiacos haven't played as recently as we have, but yeah. I know that they've won the title again and they've gone through the season beaten. And we saw in the first game, really, that, you know, they're a good team and they give Tottenham problems earlier on in the Champions League, obviously knocked Arsenal out as well. So can't really take them for granted. I think if we do get through, I mean, I've had this conversation with some of my friends as well. It's a coin toss, really. The one thing I will say is these aren't the versions of Roma or Seville that have been in the last 5 to 10 years. You know, Seville won the Europa League 3 years on the bounce and Roma got to the semi-final Champions League. These aren't the same teams as those versions. So, if we get through, I still think we will get through. Either or, I think it's going to be a difficult game. They're obviously there on merit, but I do think as well, playing over 90 minutes of football, one-legged games should suit us quite well. Yeah, so yeah. I feel that if we get past Olympiacos, I fancy us to have a run. I fancy us to get through to the semi-final. I really do.
Yeah, I mean, I really hope it doesn't come down to us playing United in the semis. Then again, that would mean the Stade Solbakken and Derby, wouldn't it? Which is terrifying in itself because of just poetic. Justice, really, I guess. Rich, in terms of Olympiacos then, what does Nuno do in terms of a formation of team? We've got an unusually long break now between now and the game in relative terms compared to how many games we've played in such a short period of time. If you're Nuno, what are you doing in terms of squad formation? Do we give players that haven't had as much time a chance, or is it just balls to the wall? We put the strongest 11 out and just get the job done?
I think the latter. Personally, I'd go 3-4-3, your standard back three. I'd be tempted to just put Dendonker in there over Sace, but not picky. And go for a Traore, Jimenez, and probably Neto up front. And, you know, we've got the 1-0 lead from the first game. I think just see it through. They've been playing better in a 3-4-3 than in a 3-5-2, regardless of that one, you know, that slender advantage. I say balls to walls. Let's just go for it and get the job done, and you know, see what's in front of us.
Yeah, I mean, for purely selfish reasons. Well, I suppose it doesn't really matter now because we're not going to be going there anyway. I'd love to us to have played Roma. Really enjoy watching them play. Much like Giroud, I'm a massive fan of Edin Dzeko, and I would love to have had the opportunity for a team that I support to play that team and play there. But let's focus on getting the job done first with Olympiacos, get over the line with that, and then, you know, what do we consider in retrospect? I mean, at the start of the season, we were talking about, you know, there's no reason why we can't win this competition. If we were to make the semis, would that signal a success in Europe for you, George?
If you look at it isolated, then 100%, you know, anything for me at the start of the season, I said if we got through the group stages and had a top 10 finish, I'd be happy this year. And we finished seventh in the Premier League, we're in the last 16, and I'm sitting here pissed off.
Yeah, that's football.
Yeah, I mean, like you say, look in an isolated view, 100%, it's a cracking effort. And I even think getting through to the quarterfinals is a big achievement for us in our first year back in Europe. A lot does rest on this FA Cup game for us now. And I mean, I've got a horrible feeling Arsenal are going to win it. I've just got this horrible, horrible stinking feeling they're going to go and win it. And then when you look at it, we need to win it. If that happens, like for me, we've got to win it. Otherwise, like I said earlier, I think this squad gets ripped apart. It's probably a strong adjective to use, but I think we'll lose a few. I really do.
Yeah.
So hopefully, you know, if Chelsea win the FA Cup, I'll be a lot more relaxed about how well we're doing in the Europa League than if Arsenal win the FA Cup, where then I think we've got to win it to keep this squad together.
Mm-hmm. I think you're right, and that's the biggest fear, isn't it? You know, we want to be building on this squad, not losing and having to play catch up for what we would have had before. And the cruel irony is the biggest game now of our season, Wolves aren't even playing, which is horrible in itself. But You know, it's one of those. What we're going to do, guys, we're going to try and end on a positive. We're going to do the quiz by positive. I just want to hear you guys struggle to answer some of these and to smash questions. So it's the kind of new format that we've been doing recently where it's going to be two different questions smashed together to create your answer. So we'll start off with a pretty easy one and we'll talk you through it if you don't get it. So I want to know who is the former Wolves and Chelsea midfielder who might have sung Karma Chameleon?
Hang on.
No. This is going to go well for this quiz if you're struggling on this one, boys. I'm not going to lie.
I passed. I can't even think of a Wolves and ex-Wolves and Chelsea midfielder. So, yeah, I've got to pass, unfortunately.
Rich, have a guess before I time you out.
I've just got Culture Club stuck in my head. I can't move past it.
Yeah, I know. I can understand.
Boy Joy.
I'm timing you out.
Boy George.
I'm timing you out. The answer is Boy George Savile.
George Savile.
Oh.
So nil for nil.
Okay.
Two open goals you've missed there, boys. I'm not going to lie.
Could this be the first complete double whitewash?
It could be. So I don't think you're going to get this on the one area, but scorer of an own goal in the reverse fixture and the 16th US president.
Abraham Lincoln.
So who's the scorer?
Tammy Abraham Lincoln.
There we go. So George off the mark.
Yeah,
good one.
Well done, mate. Okay. This is a bit of a mouthful, but Spanish defender for Wolves in the reverse fixture and Chelsea's most successful manager.
Jesus Jose Mourinho.
He's got it. And he did.
I was going to go the other way around. Could work both ways.
Yeah. So we tied one for one. Okay. So Chelsea shirt sponsor a nursery rhyme about a group of visually impaired rodents.
Three blind mice.
Oof. I was ready.
You can tell he's got kids.
I had your arm stuck in my head for a second.
So, I don't know what we're going to do if we have a tiebreak. We might have to go for a more numerical standard quiz question. But let's go for it. Last question. Legendary Italian Chelsea forward mixed with a Star Wars smuggler.
Oh, I've got it. Gianfranco Hanzola?
You're out. I'm sorry. I can't accept that. Well, I can't accept it because it's wrong. George, can you tie the series, mate?
Gianfranco Zola Fett. I'm just trying. No, it doesn't really work.
Zola Fett. I'm afraid that's also incorrect.
It is definitely incorrect. Yeah, I know.
Yeah. So the answer was you both had the first bit right. You both had the first bit right. It's Gianfranco Zolando Calrissian.
Yeah.
Oh.
But, Rich, don't despair, because at 2-1, you were the winner. Congratulations.
Thank you. I feel like Aston Villa has sort of stayed up just like from being slightly less shit than the other two teams today.
No, so I want to thank Dan for putting the quiz together, as always, our resident quiz master extraordinaire. Some good ones out. I really like that format, to be fair. So, I just want to wrap up the pod, guys. It's been a long old season in terms of the amount of games played, obviously, and the amount of podcasts that we've done. And just because the games have ended, that doesn't mean there isn't some content that we have out there that you can listen to. We've got tons and tons and tons of episodes this season, including David's had the media series, which is really excellent. We've got film casts that Andy Gillard has headed up. And my personal favourite, Stories from the Pack by Hoops, where we talk about our memories of our time with Wolves and the amount of kind of highs and lows that not only us as fans, but some names that you'll recognise as well. There's a lot of content out there in the archives, so take a listen back if you're finding you need that football fix, because we've got a bit of time now between now and Olympiacos, and there's plenty of content out there for you guys to listen to, and keep your eye out for the end of season review. So I'll sign off from me, Matt Guy. Thank you very much for listening. you want to say bye, Rich?
Goodbye, everyone.
George, do you want to say bye?
Ciao.
Ciao, indeed. Take it easy, guys. Look after yourselves.